Moramai. Good morning. I'm Judith Lay and this is Praise, the programme that connects faith and daily life. Manx Radio. On Praise today, I'm starting another new feature, delving back into my Praise archives to share some of my favourite stories. Today, popular historian Frank Cowan remembers some spectacularly successful youth work. But before that, I've stories and music for this Holocaust Memorial Day. Our opening hymn is Praise to the Lord, the Almighty, the King of Creation, sung for us by the choir of King's College, Cambridge, with a lovely soaring descant on the final verse. Praise to the Lord, the Almighty, the King of Creation. And that hymn will start our National Act of Remembrance this afternoon on this Holocaust Memorial Day. The 27th of January each year is a time to remember the millions of people murdered during the Holocaust under Nazi persecution and in the genocides which followed in Cambodia, Rwanda, Bosnia and Darfur. Genocide can begin if discrimination, racism and hatred are not checked and prevented. We're fortunate here. We're not at risk of genocide, but elsewhere in the world, discrimination hasn't ended, nor has the use of the language of hatred or exclusion. There's still much to do to create a safer future, and Holocaust Memorial Day reminds us that we all have a part to play in that process. Each year, the Holocaust Memorial Trust encourages us to listen to stories on a particular theme. This year, it is Torn from Home, the tragedy of young children sent to other countries, torn from families which in many cases they never saw again. Even if they were eventually reunited, they were often so damaged by their experiences that home and family could never really be restored.
My name's Agnes Grunwald Speer. I was a baby in the Holocaust in Budapest. My parents were both Hungarian and they were married in Budapest in 1942. Hungary was the last country to be occupied by the Germans. It wasn't occupied till the 19th of March 1944. But the Hungarians had their own anti-Semitic legislation and my father was rounded up as a forced labourer in 1943 by the Hungarian fascists, and it really ruined his life. He had a very bad time. Most of the young Jewish men who went away as forced labourers did not come back because they were so badly treated. My mother had to leave her flat in June 1944. I was born in July 1944, and she had to go to an area that was designated for Jewish women in what were called Star of David houses. And then when I was coming, she had to go to a clinic because the ordinary maternity hospital wasn't open to her as a Jew. Meanwhile, her father had been taken away. He'd been looking forward to my birth because I was the first grandchild of his four daughters. And he was on a bus and the Nazis stopped the bus and asked if there were any Jews on the bus. And you couldn't deny that you were a Jew because your documents had a big red J stamped on them. So he was taken off the bus and he was never seen again. But it wasn't till after the war that they discovered that he'd been taken to Auschwitz. And he was probably gassed the day he arrived, because if they were gassed on arrival, there's no real records. It was only the people that were registered for work who were given a number. So again, she went back to the Star of David house and we were there until November when we were sent to the ghetto. It was bitterly cold and there was no fuel other than, I think, burning old furniture. Very little food. My mother was able to breastfeed me even though she didn't have much or anything to eat. And the Arrow Cross, who were the Hungarian fascists, liked to take pot shots at the Jews in the ghetto. A lot of people died. My mother's cousin told me after my mother died that he'd been there when Budapest was liberated and he found my mother sitting on some steps in the ghetto holding me, surrounded by dead bodies. We were very lucky to survive because I was only 6 months old, and to bring a baby through that. She did a remarkable job really to keep me warm and keep me fed. And then my father came back in March 1945, but he was very embittered. He wouldn't have any more children after the war. My mother was the eldest of four girls and she would have liked more children, but he said it wasn't a world to bring children into. And in 1955, when I was 10, he committed suicide. Many Holocaust survivors did commit suicide quite some time after the war.
January the 27th was chosen as Holocaust Memorial Day because on this date in 1945, the Soviet army entered Auschwitz and liberated the 7,000 remaining prisoners, most of whom were ill and dying. It's estimated that between 1940 and 1945, around 1.5 million people were deported to Auschwitz. Of these, well over 1 million were murdered. Holocaust Memorial Day activity organiser Charles N. Whittaker wrote a poem about the transportation of people to Auschwitz. Its rhythm evokes the trains taking people to the extermination camps during the Holocaust. BAFTA-winning actor Olivia Colman has lent her support to Holocaust Memorial Day by making this recording.
Auschwitz by Charles N. Whittaker. The semiquaver chugging of the train on the track, and the people on board who will never go back, and the terror in the eyes of all the young ones to go, with no one knowing as the train comes to slow. Those men at the station as the ramps drop down, where humanity lost is the only crippled sound. Hope gone for those who stand behind the hard, sharp wire, and the smoke in the towers rises just a little higher. and the blue ink stabs a little harder in the skin, above the veins of despair where murder let it in, and the terror in the eyes of all those about to leave. Another train on the track, no last-minute reprieve. And the slow, crotchet chugging of the train on the track, and the people on board who will never go back.
Carol Jempson is a prominent member of the Jewish community on the island and for many years has taken part in the Holocaust Memorial Service. This is a story she told some years ago, but as you'll hear, it fits perfectly with this year's theme, Torn from Home.
What I'm about to tell you is a true story, as told to me by a lady I met in the 1970s on Kibbutz Gesher, which sits in the Jordan Valley in Israel. Imagine that you are around 12 years old, leading a normal, happy childhood in a loving home with your parents, older brother, and two younger siblings. Such was the life of Chava in Poland, but this was Europe in the 1940s. Chava's family were Jewish, and horror was just around the corner. The German invasion suddenly propelled Chava's family into the unimaginable horrors that were ghettos, Yellow Star of David badges, inhuman treatment, concentration camps, the Final Solution, and the Holocaust. Attempts to get children out, dangerous as they were undertaken by groups. Chava's family found an escape route and sent off their eldest son. His fate would be unknown to them, but it's a risk they decided to take. Deprived of possessions, they put the father's watch and a family photo into the heel of his shoe. So began the breakup of this family. Learning of a second attempt to rescue children, they sent out Chava. As a young girl, she endured the hardships of escaping from the Nazis with a group of strangers, walking across the Alps, and somehow, finally, arriving in Palestine. She told me of her homesickness, her longing for her family, this alien country with its scorching climate and strange language. She was given refuge by the pioneers of Kibbutz Gesher. The kibbutz was being built, and this 14-year-old stranger in a strange land became another of its pioneers. She eventually married, and when her first child was a few months old, a knock came at the door, and a man stood there that she didn't recognize. But in his hand, he carried the watch and the photo. Word of her story had got round and resulted in the two being reunited. Needless to say, Chava never saw her parents or two younger siblings again. They perished under the Nazi regime.
Thank you, Carol Jempson, who'll be contributing another reflection to this year's Holocaust Memorial Service in St Mary of the Isle, Roman Catholic Church in Hill Street, here in Douglas, this afternoon at 3 o'clock. Joining me now is Parish Priest of St Mary's and leader of the Roman Catholic Church on the island, Monsignor John Devine, who will be leading this afternoon's service.
Well, I'm technically leading it. I'll be welcoming people at the start of the service, but it's a service in which a lot of different people will be participating. a committee have planned the service, as they do every year, with Carol Jepsen and Leonard Singer, who've been doing this for a number of years on the island. The service is important because, first of all, we remember people who perhaps would otherwise be forgotten. But also, if we tell the story and we repeat the stories, the human stories, well, then there's perhaps less chance of these terrible atrocities being repeated.
Torn from home is the theme that's been set for this year. Stories of people who were children at the time of the Holocaust, who know very little about it. They survived as perhaps children of three or four, and it's trying to piece together their past.
I think one of the interesting things about the service this year, it's the participation of young people on the island. And so many of those who were involved in the Kinder Transport project were young people themselves. So to have young people from the island telling the story of those young people in turn is very poignant, really.
This is supported by government, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. The Deputy Lieutenant Governor, who is the first Deemster, obviously the Bishop and the President of Tynwald, and the Chief Minister, the Honourable Howard Quayle, will be present.
As well as representatives of all the island's different denominations.
And other churches and other faiths, yes.
It is traditional for there to be a guest speaker at this service.
This year it's Stephen Jaffe is our guest speaker.
Stephen Jaffe is joining us from his home in London. And as well as being co-chair of the Northern Ireland Friends of Israel, he's also a consultant to leading Jewish community organisations in the UK. The theme of his talk will be Holocaust as a Remembrance and Holocaust as a Warning. There is, of course, a booklet specially prepared for this afternoon's service. What I didn't expect to see on one of its pages is a picture of Paddington Bear.
Yes, it's extraordinary, and I didn't realise this at all, but Michael Bond, who wrote the Paddington Bear stories, says that his inspiration for Paddington Bear came from seeing the Jewish children evacuees of the Kinder Transport actually waiting on the platform of London's train stations in the 1930s. And that's where he got the idea of Paddington Bear from, standing with his label, with his name on, and with his little suitcase, torn from home.
Another long-term supporter of National Holocaust Memorial Day on the island is Leonard Singer. Today, as in previous years, Leonard will contribute a very significant prayer.
Kaddish is the Aramaic word for holy. The Kaddish is a prayer for the souls of the departed and a praise of God. The Kaddish is a message of continuity of the generations, a bridge in the endless chain of memory linking one generation to another. It is a prayer for peace and includes the words, "May he who makes peace in the universe bestow peace upon us." Today we will stand together in reverence as a single community showing solidarity with all the innocent victims of Holocausts, millions of whom are buried in unmarked graves or in piles of anonymous ashes, and we ask God to protect their souls. I shall read it in Hebrew, the native language of Jesus, and it is a prayer with which he would have been familiar. God knows each victim by name and where is their final resting place, and we ask him to comfort all those who mourn. Yit kadal v'yit kadash shemei rabah, v'almei divrei churutei, v'yamlich malchutei, b'chayechaun uv'yamachaun, u'chayei dilkal bet Yisrael, b'agala uv'izman kariv v'imru amein. Yehei shemei rabah mavarach le'alam ul'almai olmayah. Yit barach v'yishtabach v'yispa'a v'yishramam v'nit nasei. V'yitadaya, Vietala Vinithalal Shemeda Huchabrahu, Leala Kil Min Kal Brachata, Vishirata Tushbrachata, Nechamata, Diamiram Beomav Imro Main, Yehe Shlema Rabba Min Shemaya, Vachayim Alain of Alkal Yisrael, Vimro Main, Ausse Shalom Vimramov, Hu Yase Shalom, Alainu Alkal Yisrael, Vimru Amen.
But what if you can't get to Douglas this afternoon, but really wish that you could? Well, if you have internet access, there could be a simple solution, as Monsignor John Devine now explains.
Another innovation is that now we have live streaming of our services from St Mary's Church. And so this service too will be live streamed. So you'll be able to watch it on our website, which is manxcatholic.org. And if you click onto the menu on the website and go on to live stream, you'll actually be able to hear it live at 3 o'clock this afternoon.
So is this going to be a regular thing?
Yes, it runs for 24 hours a day. The cameras are positioned in such a way that they focus largely on the sanctuary and the altar. So the people in the pews are largely aren't visible. People who are housebound, you know, can participate in the Mass, but also for weddings and funerals, people who can't make it. And we've had feedback from all over the world. It's a great idea.
And as St Mary's is often used for other important ecumenical services, as well as concerts, the live stream could benefit not just Catholics, but the wider island community. Yes, it does depend upon having internet access, but maybe that's a good reason for us to get together with friends or family who have and watch together. And so, to today's little trip down memory lane. About 10 years ago, I did a series of programmes asking the question, has the church left the building? I visited churches of various denominations, discovering the good and varied work they were doing out and about in their local community. Popular historian Frank Cowan has been an active member of Promenade Methodist Church here in Douglas since it opened. And who better to explain how Methodism was first established here on the island?
John Wesley made two visits to the island, 1777, 1781. And as a result of that, Methodism started. And one of the places which started was in the bottom of Douglas. And one of the two churches which actually came together to form the Promenade Church was Victoria Street, which was the first Douglas church, and that was built something like 9 years after Wesley's first visit. There'd been a real spread of Methodism through the island, and then in the late 1820s, the primitive Methodist movement, which had broken away from Wesleyan Methodism because there was a falling out about using camp meetings, as they were called, outside meetings, and this group wanted to get back, as they said, to their primitive roots, which is where the primitive Methodist name came from. The church on the promenade was built along with the development of the Lock Promenade itself in the 1870s. In fact, it was one of the first sites that was actually sold. It was bought by the young men from the Wellington Street Methodist Church, which was the main primitive Methodist church in Douglas. There was far too many churches. As late as sort of the end of the war, 1945, there were something over 100 Methodist churches in use on the island, and it was quite obvious that it had to be slimmed down and rationalised. And eventually, in the late 60s, early 70s, the scheme was prepared to drop Lock Parade Church more or less to ground level and then build within the basement of that.
So that was how the Promenade Church, as we know it today, came into being. But here was a church quite definitely leaving the building, as Frank Cowan was also very involved in working with young people on the island.
The message that kept coming back was that there was nothing to do in the winter, no entertainment. And so some of the members of the Douglas and District Youth Committee decided that it was time we perhaps tackled this. And it ended up with, I think, three of the leaders, certainly, that were involved with Victoria Street, and there were others that were involved as well, getting sponsorship from one of the firms who sold records and ran a series of shows at the villa over the winter months. So we did a season and a half with some of the big names from the time using the London agent. We had the villa full, which was pretty much the 2000 mark on the couple of the biggest shows. Emil Ford and the Checkmates were actually one of the first concerts that we ran. Well, my memory of that was one of the microphones at the villa ceased working, and Emil sort of picked it up and disappeared. And a bit later on, I went looking for him, and he was in the dressing room, and he'd stripped the microphone right down to its smallest pieces, and he was starting just to put them all back together again. And by the time he went on, he'd got it all back together. It was working perfectly. We did a series the first year and then got halfway through what would have been the second season. And at that point in time, Commercial Ventures decided there was perhaps a market for entertainment in the winter months. And they set up, so of course, as soon as they set up, we backed off because we'd done what was necessary. It had provided entertainment of a sort that hadn't been available. We weren't in it to make a profit. All we had to ensure was that we didn't make a loss. And of course, we had a magnificent outlet for tickets because they went out through all the youth clubs, not just in Douglas, but right across the island. And they were organising their own transport to come in groups. And it was a real fun time, apart from anything else. We very nearly got the Beatles. It was just before their first big hit. We were negotiating for the Beatles. And in a sense, their first big hit came 2 or 3 weeks too soon. Otherwise, we'd have had them.
We really should have a bit of Beatles music there, shouldn't we? But I'm afraid we've run out of time. Thank you for listening to this week's Praise Podcast. There's a new Praise Podcast available every Sunday morning. You can subscribe for free on iTunes, Google Podcasts and Spotify, via the Manx Radio smartphone app or at manxradio.com. So, until we meet again, this is Judith saying thank you for your company, and I wish you and those you love every blessing in the days ahead.